Production. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of lips. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Yes, hello everybody. Welcome to Talking Twilight Zone on this beautiful, beautiful Saturday afternoon. And it is gorgeous. I don't know what everybody else is having, but right now we're having Indian summer. And it is 82 degrees here today in Pennsylvania. It's sunny. Tomorrow is supposed to be 81 degrees. And I'm loving this extension of the summer season because I don't want summer to end. I hate when summer ends, so we're getting a little bit of an extension of it, and it's just wonderful. So I hope everyone else is having good weather, but I can't complain right now. How is everyone doing?
Howdy.
Fine, thank you.
Hey, doing fine.
Yeah,
just been here eating my chicken. Yum, yum.
Yes, I'm here with my co-hosts, Bobby, Robert, and Dave. And Robert's having this wonderful teriyaki chicken that we can't have any of, but he's enjoying it.
Hey, if there was some way that, you know, you think this is 2014, they would have invented smell-o-vision for computers. I'm surprised.
Or some way you could shove the food right through the computer, you know. Wouldn't that be just wonderful? But I'm glad you're enjoying it. I'm making chili tonight, so we'll be enjoying that a little later on. And Dave enjoyed lasagna this week.
Yeah, I did indeed.
Yes, good for you.
Did you have a great sangria with that?
Ooh,
always a good choice.
Sangria with lasagna, you have to love that, did you?
I think I had some Italian wine.
Well, yeah, sangria, you have to have that with lasagna, right? Did you have it?
No, I did have I think it was an Italian wine. I think, what was it? Now you put me on the spot. Primitivo. It's a Primitivo.
Oh, that's Italian. Okay, close enough. That's cool. We'll let you go with that one. And Felix is giving us a rating on Drive. He said he didn't like that one at all. He says, same old plot device. Things that have a human mind of their own. And he gives it a 1. Because he always liked Edward Andrews in these shows. Okay, well, cool. So we've got a 2 for Ring-a-Ding, and we've got a 1 for Drive. Thank you, Felix. I appreciate that. So today, we are going to be talking about Season 5's episode of The Long Morrow, starring Robert Lansing and Marriott Hartley, and I'm going to turn it over to Robert for an opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Commander Douglas Stansfield, astronaut. A man about to embark on one of history's longest journeys. 40 years out into endless space and hopefully back again. This is the beginning. The first step toward man's longest leap into the unknown. Science has solved the mechanical details, and now it's up to one human being to breathe life into blueprints and computers. To prove once and for all that man can live half a lifetime in the total void of outer space. 40 years alone in the unknown. This is Earth. Ahead lies a planetary system. The region in between is the Twilight Zone.
I must feel like saying, Steve Austin, astronaut. Man barely alive.
That's right, yeah. Those remind you. Let's remind you of that. That's right. Well, yeah, we
can't rebuild this episode. We just don't have the technology.
We don't have the technology for that. No way. We do have Commander Douglas Stansfield. and he was played by Robert Lansing. And he's as Rod Serling told us, he's an astronaut. He's going to be sent to a planetary system. It's the year 1987, and the system is 141 light years from Earth. Trip's going to take 20 years each way. So to save him the ordeal of 40 years of loneliness, how nice of them, because that would be rough, he's going to be placed in this newly developed suspended animation for the 20 years until he gets there. Then he's going to be placed again in suspended animation for the 20-year return trip. And it will that animation will also prevent him from growing older. He won't grow old during this time, except for the few weeks that he'll be at the planetary system. But before he leaves, he meets and he becomes totally enchanted by his young colleague, Sandra Horn. And she's played by the lovely Mariette Hartley. And, well, as you can figure, Horn's going to be 40 years older by the time Stansfield returns because of the suspended animation. So Stansfield goes on his mission, and 40 years later, he returns. What you find out later is that, tragically, the job he was sent to do, that was already completed using technology developed after he left. So he didn't need to be there after all, and he returns as a forgotten pioneer. And it's revealed upon his arrival home that he voluntarily disabled the suspended animation system about 6 months into his journey, so that he would be the same age as Sandra when he returned. He didn't know that she had placed herself in suspended animation so she'd be his age. So in the tragic end, the old aged Stansfield sadly urges Sandra to live her new life without him, to go on and live without him. She's very reluctant to do it. She doesn't want to leave him. She tries to talk him into staying with her, but he won't hear of it. So after she leaves, General Walters, his commander, somewhat consoles him by saying, "Stansfield, you're really quite an incredible man. Maybe one distinction of my entire life is that I knew you, that I knew a man who put such a premium on love. Truly quite a distinction, Stansfield." And Stansfield just stands there and simply nods.
Why don't we just put Hugh Laurie in that scene and just have him say, "You're an idiot."
That's right. That would be perfect, wouldn't it? Oh, my goodness. Rod Serling wrote this story, you know, and I have often seen it compared to O. Henry's story of The Gift of the Magi, which is a story of great sacrifice between two people in love, much like this episode. Maybe that's where Rod got the idea, who knows. But, you know, in a nutshell, you know, the guy's heading off for 40 years. He'll be in a state of animation, and he won't notice that all his years have gone by. And, you know, in a way, this also reminded me of that season 2 episode, The Family Caper. The four gold thieves go into suspended animation for 100 years to avoid being caught and punished for their crime. But the only crime in The Long Morrow is that Stansfield falls in love within a few hours of meeting Sandra Horn. And a feeling becomes mutual on her part. And these lightning-fast infatuations, these lightning-fast love affairs happen quite often in the series. And they're usually always doomed. And so naturally, it's a short-lived affair. He has to go into space. The only problem is he couldn't, you know, stop loving her. He decides to blow off the animation. And he plans to come back as a man her age. But it went awry. It went totally in the opposite direction. And what a total mess. He comes back. He's old, and she's still a young chickadee. But that's okay. She's
awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yes, my little chickadee. But she still loves him. She wants him. And as far as I'm concerned, I thought Doug was an idiot. I thought he was. He sent her away despite her pleas to stay with him. What a jerk he was. Most unattached older men would kill to have a young beauty like Sandy in love with him. I know. He was only thinking about her feelings and the kind of life she would have with an old man. But if that was what she wanted, why not give it a shot?
But that was the civil, attitude at that time. I'm too old and all that crap. But the thing is, she didn't look it from her side. She's, 26? Probably
about that, yeah.
Yeah, and probably would have to give up maybe 15, 20 years at most if he lives to 90. Probably he might live about 10 years. So get the old man's money and then go for a younger guy after he passes away. Shoot.
I just thought it was better to try and see how it worked out. You never know. I mean, come on. Some May-December romances work out quite well. It might have been wonderful for them, and I mean, maybe it wouldn't. Maybe the age difference would have taken a toll, but isn't it better to give a chance than live it out, live out your life wondering what could have been?
I wouldn't know.
I mean, it's just better to live it out, If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. If it does, it does, You can always get out of it. I just thought they screwed up. Maybe she could have gone back into suspended animation for another 30 years, and then when she came out of it, she'd be closer to his age. Only fly in the ointment is that she probably wouldn't want to wait another 30 years, That would be pushing his luck. He'd come back to find her gone. That's kind of the dumb thing about the story is they didn't talk about what they were going to do ahead of time. If they had talked about it ahead of time, they could have avoided this disaster. Why didn't he just say, maybe I'll just not do this and I'll come back the same age as you. Or maybe she could have told him, I think I'm going to do suspended animation too. And then when you come back.
They kind of lost communications, if you remember.
That's true.
So he couldn't get the message back to her that he kind of woke up. But you know what? This thing was full of monologues. There was one missing monologue. Does man still fight against man? I have to wonder about that. Now, what clip is that from, movie-wise, that is written by the same creator of the show as well? So, just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Planet of the Apes?
Yep.
Opening? Yep.
Yep. Yep. Well, at least in the Gifts of the Magi, the couple sacrifices only enforced their love, but they were both young. They didn't have an age difference there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the dialogue in this was a little sappy, but I thought both the actors did a good job, Lansing and Hartley. They were good with their characters. Atmosphere was that interesting, it was a little eerie with the dark, shadowy halls. That was kind of a good effect with dark, shadowy halls there.
And the advance in technology 40 years from then to today in mm-hmm. there. Doesn't look that much advanced.
Exactly.
Unfortunately.
Exactly. Big change, right? And both Lansing and Hartley, they went on to appear in Star Trek episodes. And Edward Bittens was in this, and he appeared in seasons one that shot an arrow into the air. But, it had the familiar Twilight Zone twist ending, but it was kind of a cool and painful ending. It was a little sad, but all things considered, I give it a 2, because I didn't think it was all that bad for a fifth season offering. It wasn't fabulous, but, I'll give it an average for that. And so, excuse me, but I'm going to turn this over to Robert.
Thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I kind of wonder, a story like this about an astronaut loses 40 years in order to make a journey from one galaxy to another be obsolete upon his arrival back home be interesting to anyone. And, of course, we remember the commercial, I think it's a Toyota commercial with the Muppets in it, and you hear the one Muppet yell, boring. Well, that's what it was with this this episode as well. And as you said, Lynn, it is very much the Rip Van Winkle caper with the suspended animation plot.
Uh-huh.
It even looks like the same aquarium tanks that they used in that one as well. But, you know, don't get me wrong. I like Robert Lansing. He was great in the original Star Trek episode of Simon Earth as Gary Seven. And you mentioned her being in the other Star Trek episode as well. As some people may or may not know, that was supposed to be a pilot for a spinoff series that never came about, that episode of Star Trek, so back in 68. But I pretty much said, you know, in my review of the Rip Van Winkle caper that I liked the concept of it, but not the story. And also, Lynn talked about the gift of the Magi, which there's different versions of it. The one that I remember most is the one about a girl who cut off her hair to give a watch holder for the guy who has a watch, and then the guy who has the watch gets her hair barrettes for her hair. And then they both sacrificed without knowing what they did to get the items they needed.
That's right. He sold his watch.
Mm-hmm. So, and she cut her hair. So,
yeah.
You know, that's the twist of each of these stories, you know, that the one got old and the other stayed young. But, you know how over the past years, how I feel about character pieces anyway. I like a little more action than talk.
Mm-hmm.
I felt the concept was better used down the road. I always say that about a lot of these stories, that the concept is, you know, used differently further down the road. The series The Flash back in the 90s used this idea in an episode called The Ghost in the Machine. Now, the nice thing about The Flash, it's coming back. It's being rebooted, and a couple of the original actors from the Flash TV series is going to be in the new Flash series as well. The guy that played Wesley Sharp, who played the Flash, he's supposed to appear in the reboot Flash as a father, I think, to the son that is the Flash in that. And also Amanda Pays was announced to be back. And she's reprising the same character that she did in the original Flash, but she's going to be in a competing lab against Star Labs. So it kind of piqued my interest about seeing this. But anyway, the episode was called Ghost in the Machine, and it had a character in it called the Nightshade. In other words, it was a replica of the Shadow or Sandman, you know, however you want to put it. Finding a villain that froze himself from 55 to 1990. So very similar to this episode with the spin animation. Also another movie, Forever Young, with Mel Gibson and Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, yeah.
About
that.
A pilot from 1939 who was frozen in time, was brought back to life by accident in 92. And I believe that also had a young, who played in the Lord of the Rings?
Emma Watson?
No, the kid.
Daniel Radcliffe.
Elijah Wood.
No. Yeah, thank
Elijah
you.
Elijah Wood.
Yeah,
it
has a young
Harry
Elijah.
Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. Yeah, it had a young Elijah Wood in that movie. So.
Yeah, I was thinking Harry Potter.
But, of course, these are all better examples of future use of this storyline. Another one, too, and I got a clip for it, is the Space Seed, which was season 1, 22 in the original Star Trek. And I got the trailer for that.
Captain's log, stardate 3142.3. Slightly over two centuries ago, a group of scientists planned for a race of supermen and created conquistadors.
Name? Khan Noonien Singh.
From 1992 through 1996, absolute ruler of more than a quarter of your world.
Well, either choke me. Cut my throat.
You fled. Why? Were you afraid?
I've never been afraid.
But you left at the very time mankind needed courage.
We offered the world order.
I intend to take this ship.
Will you assist me?
Oh, please, Khan, don't ask me.
Leave me, then. The battle begins again. Only this time is not the world we're in. The universe. Patsy, you're no match for me. It does not matter. The captain is dead.
And he also likes real fine Corinthian leather. Kirk. Have you heard the Klingon proverb of revenge is a dish that's best served cold? It's very cold in space. Yeah, I love that line from Wrath of Khan. Anyway, old Ricardo Montalban. And that, like I said, gives the Star Trek II Wrath of Khan movie after that. And he's a great actor. Loved him in Fantasy Island series.
Yeah, he was cool. Mr. Rourke.
Yep. My dear friends, I am Mr. Rourke, your host. Welcome to Fantasy Island.
He planned.
Also, since we're going back to all these ideas that spouted from this episode, here's another one.
In the year 1987, at the John F. Kennedy Space Center, NASA launched the last of America's deep space probes. The payload perched on the nose cone of the massive rocket was a one-man exploration vessel, Ranger 3. Aboard this compact starship, a lone astronaut, Captain William Buck Rogers, was to experience cosmic forces beyond all comprehension. An awesome rush with death. In the wink of an eye, his life support systems were frozen by temperatures beyond imagination. Ranger 3 was blown out of its planned trajectory into an orbit 1,000 times more vast. An orbit which was to return the ship full circle to its point of origin, its mother Earth, not in 5 months, but in 500 years.
Not longer than 40. But, of course, Mr. William Conrad himself has canon. Loved that series, too.
Yeah.
The narration for that. But just some examples of some better use of the concept than what was used in the story. So my rating for this lackluster, boring, and talkative episode of The Twilight Zone is 1 out of 5. So,
okay.
I'll hand it over to Bobby. Bobby?
Okay, Bobby.
Okay, well, season 5 as usual, and it's a story full of holes. Doesn't make a bit of sense from beginning to end. For one thing, why in the world would you send a actual person out into another solar system for 40 years to see if there's any life there when you can much more easily and much more cheaply send an unmanned spacecraft there to find out the same thing? What's he going to do if he gets there and there's life there? Is he going to set up shop there or what? I mean, we stopped doing that ages ago in real life. We just have a space station now because it was ridiculously expensive to even consider going to faraway planets when there's obviously nothing there and no reason to go there. So that's stupid right off the top, but it's necessary for the story. I can only repeat what everybody else has already said, which is the fact that the love affair is instantaneous. They meet in the hallway, and they're right away make a connection. And about halfway through, they're making out together, and she's telling him that, I can't believe I'm in love with you after 3 hours. It's some sort of absolute nonsense. I don't know what Rod Serling was thinking when he wrote this piece of trivia. And it simply doesn't make a bit of sense in any direction. And I, much though I hate it, I've seen it twice now this week. Watched it earlier this week and watched it again this morning, at least part of it anyway. And just to see if I missed something, but I really don't understand how he can take himself out of suspended animation and still live on and come home and be an old man. What did he use for food and water? I don't quite understand that, because he didn't need any of that when he was sent there because he was in suspended animation. Now he decides to get out of it, and he has to have food and he has to have water. So I don't quite understand where he got that from. So that's just another hole in the story that doesn't make a bit of sense. So in my written review at the group, I mentioned that the same thing is happening that happens throughout season five, which is that there's no money for the series anymore. I mean, it looks like they filmed the whole thing out in the hallway. There's just nothing to look at all. And how does 40 years go by? And he looks a lot older, but the same building is there in the hallway looks exactly the same. Nothing has changed in 40 years. 40 years, nothing has changed. Yeah, that's really likely. So all those things don't make a bit of sense. And Marion Hartley was 24 years old when she made this, and today she's still with us. Robert Lansing is not, but she is. She's 74. She just turned 74 a couple of months ago. And she's still active in acting. She's got small parts in 4 movies coming out. And she was in Law and Order for several years. And even her picture is on the internet. And she looks pretty good for her age, all things considered. She doesn't look like an old lady. And she's got like almost 150 parts in various movies and TV series. So she's had quite a career over the last 50 years. She was just at the beginning of it back in those days. I think the most interesting person in the story is actually the old man, the head of the space agency there at the beginning, George McCready, who had one of the greatest voices of any actor in history. I mean, that voice is absolutely incredible. A person might kill to have a voice like that. It's quite unique. That's the only thing that kept me awake, is just to listen to him speaking at the beginning of the episode. Over at the Internet Movie Database, as usual, they're just falling all over themselves over this. They gave it a 7.9 rating out of 10. 7.9 out of 10. One person calling it one of the top 3 episodes of the entire series. Imagine, one of the top 3 of the whole series. 150 episodes, and this is in the top 3. Oh, yeah, sure it is.
I guess every single episode is somebody's favorite. Now, even the worst ones is somebody's favorite.
Well, you can like it, but you don't have to say it's in the top 3. You can just say it's one of my favorites and let it go at that. I don't care if he likes it that much. That's his business. But, you know, to call it to be in one of the top 3 is absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, like I said, I don't, the whole thing really doesn't matter. And then after all of that, as has already been mentioned in Lynn's review and has been discussed, is the fact that she simply walks away at the end. For somebody who's really in love with this man, she just turns around and walks away down the hallway in a very casual manner, except to say, yeah, you're right. You're too old for me. I think we'll just forget about it. In order to get anything out of the story, you have to have some sort of connection with the characters. And you have to believe that their love was so intense that they would do almost anything for it. But they've known each other such a short amount of time. It simply looks ridiculous. It's just ludicrous from beginning to end. And it's just in no way, shape, or form is it believable. So that's the problem with it. It's just a silly story, and like I said, it's full of holes. And I still, Robert, can you explain to me how it is he survived? How did he get food and water to come back all that time? Am I missing something? Are you there,
Robert?
Did he leave?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, he must have gotten disconnected. Well, anyway, like I was saying, I just don't understand that part of it. And I even went back and watched it again to see whether it was explained. But I don't know. I don't know how, you know, he wasn't supposed to be conscious all that time. So if he's going to do that now. And you mentioned in your review that they certainly should have just talked this over beforehand to make sure nobody made that kind of mistake. So it's supposed to be very touching and very sweet and very nice, but I'm afraid I'm not buying into it. It's not the worst episode of the series, but I gave it a 1. I have no idea why, but I'll just keep it at that and just keep it at 1. It doesn't do anything for me. And it's just, at this point in the series, there's just no special effects, no nothing. I mean, there's some film there of a rocket taking off, and that's about it. Other than that, the whole thing looks like it was filmed in one room and out in the hallway, and it's pretty bizarre.
Robert, are you back?
Yeah, I had to step away from the mic on something.
Okay.
I was talking
Bobby,
to Julie.
Bobby,
yeah, I'd ask you, can you explain to me how it is he's out of suspended animation and he survives to become an old man. Where did he get food and water from?
Oh, I agree with that. Where I was thinking the same thing, and I rewatched it today too.
Yeah.
I was thinking the same thing that you were thinking along the lines. Okay, did they plan for if he decided to wake up and decide to go the whole way and back? If
what
he's
do you
nation, why would he need water or why would he need food? Because
what
he's going to be asleep for all those years. So, yeah.
Right. All of a sudden he decides, I think I'll forget about it and just wake up now. But consider the fact that you've got nothing to eat.
They had enough food there. They had enough food there for 40 years.
Yeah,
or
right.
20 years, 20 years.
Well, we had the same thing about the Rip Van Winkle caper, too.
Yeah,
why
exactly.
Was it 100 years? Why wasn't it 25? Why wasn't it 50? You know?
Exactly.
And how did the gas keep in those cases to keep them asleep?
Did Serling write that one? I don't remember. Did he write that?
Yeah, he did.
And
well,
course,
this is
also,
the same thing they used
my...
for the Planet of the Apes movie. So it's the same concept. He took it from his episodes and put it in the movie for them.
Also, in my written review, I reprinted the fact that at IMDb, in the notes about this episode, they point out that the science is all wrong, that a trip like that, based on what they were telling you in the story, really would take only 2 years, would not take 20 years one way, would take 2 years. So Serling was good at science fiction, but just don't hand him any science to do. He wasn't very good at that. So I'll keep it at one. It's watchable, but it's just ridiculous. Lynn?
Yeah, he just couldn't do the math, I guess. Okay, Dave, over to you.
Okay, just let me remind people listening, season 5, obviously, episode 135, aired 10th of January 1964. I've got to agree that there's lots of plot holes in this. Yes, it was 141 light years away, but it said that the spaceship could travel at 70 times the speed of light. When he was showing him the pictures on the wall, he said, "Can you recognize that?" He said, "Yes, that's our solar system." And then he showed him another picture and said that you're going to this solar system. But both pictures were actually pictures of nebulae. They weren't pictures of solar system at all. So that was wrong. Then he said, "When am I going to go on this trip?" He said, "Well, the spaceship's being built. Its keel has already been laid." Now, I don't know about you and I, but when a keel is being laid, I think of it as a ship on the ocean that has a keel. So that took me a little bit. Back. I'm going to get all the negatives out of the way because I did actually quite like the story. So don't get too happy, guys. I mean, you can argue that they might have had some food on board the ship in case his cryogenics broke down, but not for.
Go ahead,
both.
Dave. Defend the science. Defend the science.
No. This is. I've not defended the science. I've already said. I've pointed out three things wrong with the science already: the plot and the science. Isn't defensible. I mean, for instance, you mentioned about the food and water. Never mind that. What about air? You wouldn't have had air for 40 years. Remember what happened to Apollo 13? They probably had enough food, but they didn't have air to breathe. So air would have been a far more critical thing in the short term than that. So there were lots of problems like that. And as I say, the 141 light years going at 70 times the speed of light, assuming that, you know, objects with mass can go faster than light, then it would have been a two-year trip either way. I don't agree with the concept of, why would you send a man out there? Admittedly, why would you go to a planet that's 141 light years away? I mean, literally... it's already been said that we're hoping to go back to Mars and have manned mission to Mars. Admittedly, that's our own solar system. And we've already discovered something like 2,000 exoplanets, quite a few that may be within the habitable zone of their suns, and also probably within 50 or 100 light years of Earth. But again, somebody's already said that science wasn't his strong point. Let me address a few of the things that Robert said. He mentioned the assignment Earth, Star Trek, where he played Gary Seven, and that it was hopefully going to be a spin-off series, but that never happened. The other things that I wanted to mention, it's another repeat of one of his stories as well. The trade-ins from Series 3, Episode 96.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where the two old people go for new bodies. They can't afford both. So they step back in that. The connections, great. I thought the money, although they may not have been that dear to hire at the time, but I thought the acting was what sold this episode for me. Robert Lansing, I love. Great acting, very laconic sort of actor, I think. Really great, and I've loved lots of things that he's been in. Mariette Hartley playing Sandra, of course, and George McCready that Bobby's already mentioned. Strangely, both Mariette Hartley and George McCready were both in Peyton Place, so there was a connection there with them. What else? Oh, yeah. It was rather strange. I can believe that she fell in love with him in that first 3 hours, because don't forget, he wasn't actually taking off for either 6 weeks or 6 months, so they had time for that relationship to flower, I suppose. But it did seem rather strange what she said to him, you know, just before he's going to leave. You know, it's like saying to a sportsman who's going for his greatest match, by the way, when this match is over, don't bother coming back to the flat because I've locked you out. You know, it's timing was shocking. but of course, that was the whole reason why he presumably mulled over it. Agree absolutely with Bobby again. If you're in suspended animation, you haven't got the movement to switch yourself off. I think it would have been more believable if he'd gone in suspended animation all the way. And maybe he'd found vegetation on the planet or whatever, and maybe he'd come back but not stepped into the cryogenic thing for the return journey. In which case, he would have only been, 20-odd years. He was 31 when he went. Well, 31 when he was asked about the mission. Maybe he was 32 when he took off. So he'd only be, it said over 40 years, so let's say over 20 years. So he would have been, you know, maybe in his mid-50s when he came back. And she's 26, maybe with the social mores of the time, that still would have been too large a gap. I'm glad Robert also mentioned the Mel Gibson film Forever Young. I was going to mention that. Ed Binns, another of the great actors there, was in 12 Angry Men, so I liked him from that. I did think the acting was very good. I do think it was wordy, but I actually enjoyed it in that 25 minutes. I wasn't bored at all. I quite liked it, but it was very problematic with the plots. Would have been a nice ending, Lynn. I don't know whether you like nice endings or whether you might think it would be syrupy. And this is where I get the idea from the Forever Young story. They'd both gone into suspended animation, neither knowing the other had, or that he'd stepped out and she'd gone into it. But of course, it would be assumably in its infancy, that sort of thing. So,
wouldn't
it have been marvellous if when he's an old man and he meets her and she's still young and he looks at her and he's starting to tell her, you know, that there can't be any future for us, and the camera pans round, so the camera's behind her, right? And he's staring at her, telling her all this, and then slowly, as he gets towards the, you have to make a life of your own. Suddenly, his expression changes, the camera backs round, and actually, the cell damage that is being caused by the suspended animation has actually been wearing off, and right before his eyes, she's actually aged back into a 70-year-old person.
That would
almost
be cool.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yep.
And,
that would be cool.
Yeah, whether that would have been too schmaltzy and he would have been accused at the time for making it too sweet an ending, I don't know. But it could have been an alternate one. So, to sum up, I've talked rather long here.
I would have liked that.
Yeah, but as I say, Robert Lansing loved him as an actor, loved the others. I thought it was a class piece of acting. Pity they were given such a bad script Pity there were so many plot holes in the whole thing. So
I think the last thing that Robert Lansing... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah?
I was going to say, I think Robert Lansing's last series was Kung Fu, The Adventure Continues with David Carradine, I think, was the last thing he did before he passed away.
Wasn't he always also in 12 O'Clock High, the TV series?
Oh, I think he was.
Mm-hmm. In the 60s.
I think he was in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It only
probably,
lasted a year or so,
Well,
sorry,
David,
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
What was your rating for that?
I'll give it 3 for the acting. I was going to try and remember. The other actor he reminded me of is the bloke out of Magnificent Seven. You know, the one that used the knife. In Light Flint guy, or what he's called.
Oh, Clint Eastwood?
Oh, yeah. No. I know who he's talking about. Yeah. He played in Our Man Flynn. He was in Looker and some other movies, too. James Coburn. Yeah.
James Coburn.
There you
That sort of cat-like walk and that, you know, thing. And it's amazing how many of these actors, of course, are all in Westerns. I suppose they were a staple diet of TV.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I give it 3. But basically, that is all for the acting. I have to concur with people here that the plot just doesn't hold up.
Doesn't jive,
but,
Okay. And
Dave, was it also maybe you were thinking of Robert Vaughn from The Man from U.N.C.L.E.? He was in that
Robert
movie
Vaughn?
Too.
He's got that sort of like it's James Coburn, but it's the way they walk. They've got this like panther-like walk. It's great. I mean, I loved him in the Star Trek episode as Gary Seven. Got a great screen presence. But, yeah, a really good cast. And I think probably why a lot of people have affection for it is seeing these people in what would have been their early work.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And Felix gives it a 1. Felix said that it has a very cold ending, which he didn't like. He said it could have been a 4, but he gives it a 1 because of the emotionally detached ending. So I can understand that, Felix gives a 1 for this.
Yeah, Robert Lansing was in 12 O'Clock High the same year, 1964.
Oh, okay.
The TV series.
Yeah.
And he's made numerous guest appearances over the years, too. I remember him from, you know, a lot of Westerns was in, too.
He had a good
career. He played Doc Holliday in The Tall Man. With Barry Sullivan and Kluger. I can never pronounce his name. He was in lots of great stuff. He was in Branded with Chuck Connors.
12 O'Clock High was only on for a year. He was also in a series called The Man Who Never Was.
Oh, I remember that.
And he was also, this is topical, he was control on The Equalizer. Well, The Equalizer's just been remade, hasn't it?
Robert? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah, I remember The Equalizer. Jeez, I forgot about that series.
Yeah, Washington's supposed to be playing him in the movie.
That was 85 to 89, yeah.
How old was Robert Lansing when he died?
66.
66.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's all? Jeez. He died young.
Yeah, Edward Woodward played the lead character in that series, The Equalizer. Yeah. It was on CBS. I remember it.
Did
I never got interested. I've seen it off and on.
Did anybody mention Kung Fu? He was in that too.
Yeah, that was his last thing he did.
The legend continues.
Yeah, he played a police detective in that series. So.
Mariette Hartley had a pretty good career too.
Well, she still does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Got 4 movies coming out.
Yeah, as I mentioned, last time she did the Polaroid commercials with James Gardner.
That's right.
Back in the 80s, I do believe at that time.
This was cool. All right, guys. Well, we've got our closing for this. Okay, so we've got some 1s and 2s and a 3. And I guess...
Thank you, boys.
Yes, of course. And And 2 weeks from now, what is 2 weeks from now? Self-improvement of Salvador Ross. That is on Saturday, October 11th. God, we're in October already. I hate this. I hate that summer is over. But Saturday, October 11th, Salvador Ross, self-improvement. And that is starring Don Gordon and Gail Coby. And a very, very good veteran of the Twilight Zone, Vaughn Taylor. He's a veteran of the Twilight Zone. He played Henry Bemis' boss in Time Enough at Last. And he played the man who ran the factory in...
I Sing the Body Electric.
He's been in four or five episodes. And I like Vaughn Taylor. So he's in this. Don Gordon, Gail Coby. So we will talk about the self-improvement of Salvador Ross 2 weeks from now on October 11th, 6 p.m. And I hope we see everyone there. And you too, Felix. You better be there.
Oh, Lynn, before we go, Julie wanted me to mention that this is the 50th anniversary of Gilligan's Island. So
The what?
Gilligan's Island.
The what episode?
50 years.
The what island? 50 years. 50 years too long.
Gilligan's Island, 50 years.
There's a proud day for TV. There's a proud day.
One of the worst sitcoms of all time. Oh, my God.
Well,
cringe-worthy.
I got to meet Bob Denver. I got his picture here in my room. He was at Put-in Bay before he passed away years ago. And I got to meet him, got him to sign my photo. He signed it Gilligan, which is kind of funny, and he has the white hat on. So
I think that was... Oh, Felix, seriously, you love Gilligan's Island? I hate it. I think that was one of the worst sitcoms of all time. I never thought it was even funny. Oh, Felix.
Little buddy.
Oh, God.
Gilligan!
Well, the professor got him interested in science. Well,
trust me.
Professor,
trust me, Hogan's Heroes is even worse.
Well, Hogan's Heroes bad. I think Gilligan's Island's bad.
Nothing quite as nice as funny Nazis.
They're both bad. And
we all know how funny they were.
And three companies right up there, too. Oh, God. I see nothing. I hear nothing. And three companies up there, too. Oh, my God. Some of the worst sitcoms ever. But you know what? They have a following, and they come around every now and then on TV land. So God bless them.
Oh, Lynn, I've got some sad news just to tell you.
Yes.
George Clooney's got married. So
yeah,
he's out here
this
go.
Weekend. He's off the market.
God, who cares?
The boy is off the market. He finally got married. Like,
why you didn't get invited to Italy, Lynn, to go to the
wedding? Get invited. I'm very sad about that. I should have been invited, you know. And I remember when he was just a fledgling, when he was on Roseanne. Remember when he was on Roseanne? He played her boss.
Yep.
Is it like this
in the
like
factory?
Big
yep.
part in the factory. Oh yeah, George Clooney. He was like Warren Beatty. He never thought he'd make it to the altar. You know. He finally got married.
I was disappointed. I was hoping he was gay.
You were hoping he would marry Matt Damon or something, right?
Right.
Well, good for him. Good on him. I give the marriage 2 years. I give all the Hollywood marriages 2 years. And then if they last longer, I say good on them. I give 4 years. And then I give it 6 years. And it eventually ends. You know, but I'm happy for him, I suppose. So, guys, I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Hey, I hope you'll all be here. We've got to talk about Salvador Ross. Okay.
Bye.
Adios, amigos. Happy weekend.
You too, guys.
Bye.
Take care, everybody. Talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, Felix.
Rod Serling, the creator of Twilight Zone, will tell you about next week's story after this word from our alternate sponsor.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Next time out in the Twilight Zone, an unusual little item from the pen of Jerry McNeely, based on a story by Henry Slezar and called, intriguingly enough, The Self-Improvement of Salvador Ross. This one poses a question. If you don't like what you are, how do you go about changing? Don Gordon portrays a man who really goes to the root when it comes to some basic changing, and the results are most unexpected.